Well, as 2015 comes to an end, St. Louis Public Radio's arts and culture reporters are here to reflect on some of the stories that they covered. Nancy Fowler, Robert Duffy, Willis Ryder Arnold are all here, and hello to you all.
Hello.
Hi, Steve.
And hi, Steve.
And this is serious. Is anyone sorry to see the year go?
I think
can't
it's been
get
a
much
quick
worse,
one.
Can it?
Don't hold back, Bob.
Right.
Sorry to see the year go? No, not so much, that's but so much. Glad to see the next one come, for sure.
All right, well, that's a good positive attitude. You know, you've all been covering your beats for a while. How did 2015 stand up as a year for interesting stories? Is it just like all the others? Was anything special about last year? Just generally.
Well, I think there was, you know, a lot of work around social justice. I mean, you know, the arts have always addressed social justice. But I think, you know, beginning in 2014, you know, after the events of Ferguson, that has continued and in a deeper and bigger way. And, you know, just emerging themes around social justice. Mm-hmm.
That's
sure.
a good point.
I think that the Monday after Michael Brown was killed, we all sat around in the boardroom on the second floor and talked about the fact that it wasn't our job to advocate for one position or another, but it certainly was our job to do anything we could that of a neutral sort that might help the situation. And so the response was the arts, and we worked with Opera Theater and a bunch of other musicians in town, Christine Brewer and Peter Martin, and we produced a really valuable concert up in the Normandy High School in the auditorium that had people weeping because it really resonated, and it really was a place to come and feel not anger but sorrow and find some beauty in things. So that commitment that started in 2014 has been maintained, and we, as you all of us know, our colleagues are working on a project called We Live Here, and that has tangents that have to do with the arts as well.
Right. Willis, anything reflecting on last year?
I would say that social justice issues have absolutely come to the fore in the arts community, specifically in the hip-hop community and with visual artists like Damon Davis and Dee Nichols. Some of the work that's been produced and even protest signs have been included in places like the Smithsonian.
Hmm. Well, before we go any further, all three of you are arts and culture reporters here at St. Louis Public Radio, but you all sort of have different beats. I don't know if you call it a beat, but different things that you're interested in and tend to cover and that sort of thing. So could you each briefly sort of talk about what you focus on, what you're interested in, and what you'd like to cover, Nancy?
Well, I really enjoy covering theater. You know, St. Louis has a burgeoning theater scene and, you know, doing a lot of, you know, diverse work from quirky shows to, you know, the Fox with the, you know, the Broadway tours. And also I enjoy just covering any work around marginalized populations, you know, including the transgender community. There's been a lot more work right. around that population as well.
We'll get into more of that with you in just
sure.
a little bit. Bob?
Well, I guess it is as my beat has evolved, I'm doing more and more with city planning and historic preservation. I've always been very interested in the visual arts and painting and sculpture, and I'm interested in opera, and I'm interested in I've watched opera theater develop from the beginning and have a pretty good perspective on that as well as the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra with which I've traveled all over the world. So it's a pretty wild and woolly background that I have. It goes in many, many directions, but the focus is on the built environment.
Willis, what about you?
Well, right now some of my responsibilities include covering the Zoo Museum District and their five institutions, as well as kind of experimental or exploring arts and contemporary music as well.
All right. Well, let's talk about some individual stories. We're looking back at 2015 and some of the things that the three of you have covered that stand out for whatever reason. Nancy, you mentioned the transgender issue, and I know you've done a couple of things for us about that. Talk about what you've covered.
Well, one of the stories that really interested me is there's a couple that recently moved to St. Louis, and they are producing a book of portraits of transgender people over the age of 50. And one is a renowned photographer. She just got an award at the White House last month. And the other is a social work professor at Washington University. And so they are producing this book to just give portraits and bring to life the stories of transgender people who are over 50, really all over the country. And what it is – go ahead, Steve.
Well, I was just wondering, why over 50? Do you know?
Well, it's because it's about two populations that are often ignored. Really, the, you know, older people and also transgender people. And photographer Jess Dugan puts it this way in this clip.
We're trying to challenge this notion that you sort of peak at, what, like 45, and then you're on a decline for the rest of your life. It's but actually, you know, what we're trying to show is that people develop and grow and take on really amazing transformations later in life and are just really, I think we're trying to fight that myth that everyone's just kind of on a downhill slide past a certain age, because it's really, I mean, obviously it's not true.
I find it really fascinating and interesting how transgender issues have, you know, really come into public discussion over the last year or two. It wasn't so long ago. I remember it wasn't something you even talked about. Most people wouldn't even talk about.
I know. And there was just really a total lack of awareness. And I think as LGBT issues have moved forward, and also with the advent, you know, in popular media, Transparent, Caitlyn Jenner. But, you know, this book is an attempt to just humanize and, you know, put forth the lives of just regular, ordinary Americans. It's a nationwide project, you know, and kind of what their lives are like.
I actually think it's really important that Nancy covered this story, because a number of other younger artists that I've spoken with since she did this story have talked about how great this project is and how influential it is on their own work. So it's something that even if you're necessarily covering like an older set of people, the younger artists are really interested as well.
Yeah, it was interesting after, you know, we did the story and we went on a photo shoot with one of the subjects. So shortly after that, CNN covered the project. The New York Times had a big spread in their arts and entertainment section, the Boston Globe. So it's really getting a lot of attention for this St. Louis couple and their project.
All right, Bob, how about you? What were the issues in Wellston that drew you?
The issues involved in what? I'm sorry.
Wellston?
Oh, in Wellston, yes. There's a fellow a preservationist, architect, author, and writer named Andrew Ramist, who noticed, as many of us have who sort of prowl around in North St. Louis, there's a wonderful building that dates from the 1950s that looks like a very fine international-style building, which is what it is. It was a JCPenney store, and as happened with many neighborhoods, after the streetcars were put out of business, the city of Wellston really went out of business, and the decline was very fast. And if you look at the film clips from the 1940s and 50s in Wellston, it was a thriving community, and this store was like this white beacon there. It has now been bought by a young fellow, an entrepreneur, who's using it to store stuff that he picks. But there's great hope that perhaps with this building as the focus and with the old Wellston turnaround as a focus, that something can be done up there. So that's a big interest of mine. I want to go east and look at Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Drive, which goes into Wellston, and see really and to follow the progress of decay, and as with Wellston as sort of the climax of the story.
Bobby, you said you'd like to prowl around North St. Louis. What is it that draws you there?
The contrast between some remnants of the past that are still intact, a Belle Fountain Cemetery being a principal one of them, that's so beautiful. It's just it's transcendently beautiful. But then to look at what's being built as infill now. But really, my interest is on older buildings that are falling down, and to sort of see and think about how we waste resources, not just in St. Louis, but in all major cities in the United States, that there are wonderful, wonderful buildings that have just been allowed to go to pot and or to be torn down or burned down. And I'm trying to figure out in my own mind why this has happened and what might be done about it.
There's also a strange sort of beauty.
There is.
For some reason, I'm drawn to old, dilapidated ruins.
Yep.
I kind of picture of times going by. I don't know if that's just a romantic notion in my head. Do you guys feel the same way?
Absolutely. I think it's really hard not to really respect the amount of kind of brilliant architecture that exists in the city at St. Louis, but a lot of the different issues that the city faces have left a lot of those buildings kind of derelict, and they're just beautiful and captivating.
And there's so many stories within, you know, the layers of the decay and the detritus that's there just begging to be told.
Right.
Let's talk about a different old structure, Willis, and this is something you've covered, the Soldiers' Memorial downtown.
Yeah, so basically the main story here is that the Missouri History Museum is taking over the management and running of Soldiers' Memorial. It's something that's been months in the work, and the History Museum took over formally in November.
Is it just because they had deep pockets to do it?
I think it's a little bit that they were able to raise the funding to do it, but it's also that they are very committed to ensuring that that collection is treated as well as it deserves. So they're doing a lot of renovations that include giving the external part of the building a facelift, expanding exhibition space, and they're currently in there now going through and cataloging everything that the Soldiers Memorial has.
The wonderful thing about that building is it's sort of as if it's been under a bell jar for years and years and years. It's been untouched. And if you go up into the sort of the attic, there are rooms that look as if someone closed the door in 1950, and it's just been the same forever. The furniture's all there, and it's really quite wonderful. And the collection's wonderful, too. It was just sort of not cataloged or sort of displayed willy-nilly, and somebody had typed the labels up on a little Royal typewriter and, you know, sort of crossed out mistakes. But it's a real treasure. And I'm so happy. It was where we all would go when we were on jury duty. We'd go over there and hang out and look around.
Location-wise, prime real estate.
Absolutely,
right?
Yeah.
I mean,
and with the library and having this Renaissance, it's right there across the mall from it.
Let's talk about another piece of real estate. I'm not sure if it's prime real estate or not, but Nancy, you covered the Museum of Black History and I guess the struggles they've had?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Griot Museum, it's G-R-I-O-T, it's a West African word for storyteller, is in North City. Bobby talked about North City a little bit. It's just down the street on St. Louis Avenue from Crown Candy, and Lois Conley opened it nearly 20 years ago with, you know, great hopes and fanfare, and dignitaries came, and she created many of these wax figures that tell the stories of, you know, various people in St. Louis, African-Americans that played a huge role. And but, you know, they went from like 35,000 visitors a year to now like 4, and the money is not there. And it's just a struggle for Lois Conley, and she's everything. I mean, she's the artist, she's the curator, she's even the janitor at this point, cleans the toilets. And, you know, she said sometimes it's just hard, you know, to keep going. And she talks about that in this clip.
And there are days, I tell you, when I just want to, you know, pull the covers over my head and say, I just can't do it again today. I just can't do it again. But this is my baby, and I love doing this more than anything I've ever done. And there's no greater satisfaction than when some young person comes here and gets excited about history and gets excited about knowing that they were a part of it and gets excited about knowing that, you know, black people did certain things. And there's just no better, no greater satisfaction for me than that. So rather than pull the covers over my head, I get up and I shower and I get dressed and I come and figure out how to make it work another day.
I love her attitude, and I can, you know, tell she believes everything that she says. Is she going to do it?
She is. She is. They're actually talking with a possible donor. She's got her fingers crossed. And after our story, they actually had, as a result of the story, several donations, several groups of visitors, and even a possible new board member and a grant collaboration. So it's journalism at work.
The Zoo Museum District, that's been an interesting story, Willis. It's been going on for a while. I don't know where the controversy started. I'm thinking back to Bob Archibald and you know, everything that happened with the History Museum. Is it all tied into that, or maybe could you simplify it for me?
I think that that story kind of launched a deeper attention to what the Zoo Museum District was doing. And then in recent years, there was the issue with the Science Museum and Pat Whitaker. And so the Zoo Museum decided that they needed to revise their code of ethics, which was a months-long process, which has resulted in that conflicts of interest must be declared immediately. They must be reported to board members appointing officers, and there must be new annual financial disclosures.
Mm-hmm. 2015 is the year we're looking back in the arts, and we've talked about a lot of the stories that came to your mind. Are there any stories that you didn't report on that you thought almost made it? Does anything come to mind? Because I know you work on a lot of stories right behind the scenes. They all don't make it to the website or on the air.
I feel like one of the stories that I really wanted to cover in depth was that the mirror coffin, which featured so prominently in the Ferguson protests, was possibly going to find its home at a larger institution, and I wasn't quite able to get all of the sound and conversation about that covered.
Uh-huh. Anybody else? Anything come to mind?
Well, I think that we all work very hard to do as much as we can. Things are going to slip through the cracks. We now have the energy of Kelly Moffitt, who's also doing a great job of covering things that we don't
see. She's an online producer here.
Yes, she is.
Yeah.
So I can't think of anything in particular.
Good enough. Let's talk about the Cut and Paste podcast, because it was just about a year, I guess almost a year ago, Willis and Nancy, that began, and you were on this program and we talked about that. How's that been for you?
We have had so much fun talking to, you know, people and pairs of people. You know, musicians like Thelonious Kryptonite and St. Louis theater legends like Joan Lipkin and her Uppity Theater Company, and just a variety of folks. And that's one way, maybe a story we didn't get to cover. Well, we can get that person in and, you know, talk with them and find out what makes them do what they do. Right, Willis? Can you think of anybody else that...
I think two
out.
People that we found that were really interesting was Stan Chisholm, who's both a visual artist and a musician. He goes by 18 and counting. And then poet Ted Mathis came on our show and kind of discussed the intersection between language, memory, and mathematics, which was something I'd personally not thought about.
So for more information on the Cut and Paste podcast, go to our website, stlpublicradio.org, and people can find out more about it that way. Notable people that passed in the last year, people like Ray Kennedy, Clark Terry, Fontaine Sire, who was involved in theater here.
Absolutely.
Antekach was a bassist who was heavily involved in the Americana scene, who also passed tragically in a house fire.
Anything on your radar, just really briefly, for next year? Anything that you think you might be covering in 2016?
Well, I'm going to keep going on Martin Luther King and Wellston. And then things it's amazing. I think we'd all agree that you come in on Monday and think, well, I've got a little bit of time to do some reading, and then things just seem to happen.
Yes, they do. New Line Theater turns 25 next year. I think it'd be a good time to kind of explore and assess the St. Louis theater scene.
And one final question, Willis Ryder Arnold, I have for you. I've noticed a paperclip on your collar, and it's not the first day I've noticed it. So is that art?
No, this I think is more of a accident. I placed it there to keep it on me so that we could file in time, and it's just stayed there.
So is it going to stay there for a while? Or
I think I might need it in the future, yeah.
All right. Well, we certainly have appreciated all of you for what you've covered and your interest over the last year. We want to thank our arts and culture reporters here on St. Louis Public Radio. We've been talking to them today about their most interesting stories in the last year. Nancy Fowler, Robert Duffy, and Willis Ryder Arnold. Thank you. Thanks to all of you for being here. And best wishes on the new year, I guess, a little early.
Thanks, Steve.
You too.
This is Cityscape on St. Louis Public Radio.